Log Talk Radio.
Hey, everybody. How are you guys doing? Welcome to the Seaman on Sports podcast. My name is Jimmy Seatman. It is a Tuesday night, and Spurs and the Rockets just finished up a great one, went to overtime. Overtime period was a little bit sloppy, kind of lack scoring for a little bit, but it definitely was a great ending. The Spurs win 110-107, now leading the series 3-2. Manu Ginobili had a great block on James Harden at the end of overtime, sealed the victory for them. Watching the game, I don't think I really thought that the Spurs were going to win it. I thought the Rockets kind of had control, but they were able to fight back. They also did this with Kawhi Leonard on the bench, who injured his ankle. And so the whole overtime period and late in the fourth, they didn't have their best player on the floor. The Rockets looked gassed a little bit. I mean, they're only playing seven guys right now because Nene is injured. And basically, you know, and D'Antoni has always been a guy who doesn't really trust a lot of guys in the playoffs. You know, I think, you know, throwing out like a Sam Decker, even though he's been injured, or Montrezl Harrell for a little bit, wouldn't be the worst thing in the world, even if it's for a couple of minutes. But hey, you know, I'm not the co-coach of the year in Mike D'Antoni. So, yeah, no, that series has been extremely interesting so far. I thought the Rockets were, you know, after the first game of the series, I didn't think that the Rockets would kill them, but I thought it would be Rockets in six. That's what I predicted before the series started. And, I mean, the Spurs have really just kind of tried to make the Rockets get away from what they do best, and they're sticking to a lot of three-point shooters. And that's something they made the adjustment after game two, is basically, look, like we're gonna stick to you guys, and we're going to try to let James Harden beat us. And now look, the Rockets have been able to get off a lot of threes. That's kind of what they're trying to do. And they either make threes or score layups. And it feels like they shot a ton of threes tonight. They shot 48 threes. They were 33%. So you can catch them on a night, which is 33%. You're probably going to have good luck with that. So, and now Dave is joining me. Dave, how are you doing, man?
Hey, I'm doing great, Jimmy. How about yourself?
Doing good. I'm doing good. I just watched the end of that Spurs-Rocket series, and I know there's been a lot of talk about how the playoffs have been boring, but that was definitely not a boring game.
No, that was I had that on my laptop, the basketball game, and watching the Orioles and the Nets, watching the Nationals blow another lead late in the game. Christ, if the Nationals had any relief pitching, they'd probably be 30-5. But relief pitching's killing them down the stretch. But, yeah, exciting game. Too bad to see Kawhi Leonard sprain his ankle. Hopefully he'll be able to come back. But Spurs were even the old man Ginobili making some plays down the stretch. And kind of held off the Rockets in overtime. Now it's what, 2-2 in that series, right?
It's a 3-2. The Spurs are up 3-2.
Oh, nice. I always like the Spurs. They're not quite the same team we're used to, but still play a good brand of ball. And it's been an interesting matchup because two completely different styles. Kind of fun to watch. So.
Yeah. No, It's been interesting that in game four, Pop stuck with like a lot of the bigger lineups and they got killed, just because the Rockets came out and basically started Gordon instead of Anderson, and they're able to just shoot the lights out on them. And the Rockets are basically only playing seven guys since Nene got hurt. They're just having Ryan Anderson come off the bench and kind of be their backup center, and then also having just Eric Gordon and Lou Williams. So, I don't know. D'Antoni always it's weird. D'Antoni has a style where you feel like he'd like to play a bunch of guys because it's so up-paced and maybe so taxing, but he's always been a guy in the playoffs who's really tightened his rotations. I mean, he usually only has seven or eight guys, and especially with Nene getting injured, he only played seven guys tonight. And I think at the end you could see like James Harden was just done physically. And I don't know. I mean, the other thing I've noticed is, you know, LaMarcus Aldridge has just kind of looked pedestrian this whole series. I know he's a certain type of player and everything like that, but I mean, it just feels like he doesn't really offer anything to you when he doesn't have the ball in his hands. And he also, like, he isn't really able to take advantage of some mismatches that he gets. And it just seems like, you know, kind of like when the LeBron was on J.J. Barea in the post in the finals 5 years ago, it seemed like he couldn't do it mentally. Like, feels like anytime Aldridge gets matched up against, like, a Eric Gordon or a James Harden, he just can't capitalize on it. And this was supposed to be the Spurs' second-best player, and he's played far from like that this series. Now, they're up 3-2, so, I mean, you have to feel good if you're the Spurs. But I think going forward, especially if you're going to play a team like the Warriors, I mean, Aldridge has to contribute in some way, and they're paying him a lot of money.
No, that's true. I guess he did play good in, what, Game 3 was probably his best game. But, yeah, he's definitely – you know, for what they need, too. And then what they pay and what they need, what they expect. I don't know what's going on with him. I thought this would have been a series I could understand against Memphis because they're so rough and tumble. And defensively, they're more in sync than Houston is. But I thought he'd have his way more. And now, especially with Nene out, that's a big loss for Rockets. Nene was in the best shape probably of his career. He'd really had been never was in that good a shape with the Wizards. But he does always get hurt, and that seems like an unusual injury. You don't see that too much with basketball players, torn abductor muscle. But, they said they're definitely going to lose him. And the Rockets, yeah, they're not going to. I mean, I don't think any of these teams will have a chance against the Warriors. And really, realistically, the Wizards were the only team that would give the Cavaliers at least some problems. But the Wizards just still have too many moments of just not playing enough defense, not getting the loose balls, and committing too many turnovers. And I love them. But, man, when they put on that show the other night, you know, when they play like that, I mean, it's just amazing to watch, scoring 26 in a row. Turn the whole game around, but you just don't see enough of that. I mean, they play great defense, which is unusual for them. And they even know that's what it takes, but it's still hard to do. But enjoying the series. I love how they finally have, the Wizards has really put the old slam down on the little man, Isaiah Thomas. But we'll see up there in Boston. Always seems, both these teams seem to really play well at home. But that's a rough and tumble series right there. I mean, it's been physical. We haven't talked since Oubre got thrown out, which was a good call.
I think it's the first time in the sports history that two guys named Kelly went at each other.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. What a coincidence that was. You don't see that very often. But, Kelly. First name, too.
I kind of grew tired of that discussion because there was this whole, like, you know, I think there was, like, a whole 2 days of just talking about that one incident. And I think it's both-sided. I think Olynyk set what it was somewhat of a dirty screen. And then I also think Kelly Oubre was pretty fucking stupid for running up to him full force and pushing him. You know, like, and shoving him. And, like, yeah, you know, like, do I agree that he shouldn't have gotten suspended? Sure, but it also wasn't crazy in my mind to do it. So it didn't end up hurting the Wiz in any way because they won, obviously. But it's just, like, you can't do that. Like, I know people were like, oh, well, he got kicked out of one game. Why kick him out of another? But if you're Oubre, you just can't do that. Like, unfortunately, this isn't the 80s. It's funny, like, people are always like, I remember when the 80s were so great and you could push each other and punch each other and everybody loved it, yet the first people who were like, he should be suspended for game 4 were all the people who were, like, 40 years old and above. So, I don't know.
Jimmy, I actually thought he had a chance not to be suspended because he's never been in trouble before. He's never been suspended before. And he didn't really throw a punch. He did attack aggressively and gave him a hard push. But really, for a guy that outweighs you by 50 pounds, he probably shouldn't have fallen down so easily.
Olenek was selling it. And look, I mean, I think the NBA is kind of in a bad position because they want to show that they won't allow this in any type of way. And I mean, how they got players to stop coming off the bench for brawls was basically being like, you step foot off that bench in a brawl and we'll suspend you. And then that ended up hurting, you know, like the Phoenix Suns guy like 6-7 years ago when like Amari and Steve Nash and other guys came off the bench and they were all suspended for a game versus the Spurs. So the NBA does these things to make sure they don't happen. But I mean, you probably don't remember this, but earlier, like right before the end of the season, you know, Robin Lopez basically just like punched Serge Ibaka in the face, or at least made contact, and he was only suspended for like a game. So it's become like very shaky what is suspension worthy and what is not. But it didn't end up hurting him at the end of the day, and it'll be interesting. But I mean, obviously, the Wizards Celtics series and the Spurs Rockets series have been the two really interesting series this round.
Yeah, as much as possible. I mean, you know, the interesting part about that game, to win by so much, you know, John Wall went 0-for-9 to start the game. Even Charles Barkley said that had to be a guy who started at 0-for-9 and then ended up having a fantabulous game. I mean, he was the reason why they won. I mean, the charge that he led at the end of the first half to get back to a tie game and then to lead the explosion, you know, with 13 points and 5 assists and 26 points in a row, outburst, you know, blocking shots, playing defense, not afraid to shoot after missing 9. Some of the greatest passes you've seen all season, you know, the blind pass to Gortat. And like Barkley said too, man, and I mean, first thing I thought of was, you know, the pass was fantastic, but for Gortat to be there when the pass was delivered and finish was fantastic. And then the no-look pass that he hit Gortat with, just nobody makes the pass. I mean, Chris Paul can, but Westbrook can. He don't make those kind of passes, and Curry can. Curry can make some of those passes, but I don't know. Ross, pretty spectacular with these passes. Such a great, real point guard, real leader, really growing up. Really amazed.
He's clearly been the second best player in the Eastern Conference this playoffs, at least. I mean, LeBron.
Yeah, that's what they were
like
saying.
Completely different level, but John Wall in this playoffs. I'm not saying. I mean, you can make the argument that he's the second best player in the East, but I think there's no argument that he's been the second best player in the East this playoffs. I mean, he's had some incredible games, and I mean, he also can't really afford to sit because the Wizards. I think their bench so far this. I mean, their starters so far this series are like plus 46. And their bench is like minus 39 or something like that.
I mean, yeah, I think it's worse. I think it's like 50 something, minus 50 something. But they definitely struggle, especially when he puts too many in at one time. It's just tough to do four reserves and one, he leave one starter in.
Yeah, Scott Brooks has never been a guy who staggered well. Like when he was the coach in Oklahoma City, like a lot of people thought, you should always keep like either Westbrook or Durant in the game at all times, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. He had to start doing that with the Wizards. You know, he started leaving Morris and Beal in just to leave a good starter. And like, he'll take Beal out early or Morris and then put them back in with the reserves. But you saw what he was doing the other day. He finally, you know, that one game, he didn't get Bogdanovich in hardly at all. So he's made sure he's gotten him in the game. Just a guy that can give you 15 to 20 on any given night, you just got to get him in the game as much as you can. That's for sure. And then, you know, finally get Mahimi in a few games. It's a tough series for Mahimi because these guys are a little quicker and play more of a perimeter game, and that's just not his strength. But you can still get him some minutes. That's for sure. And, you know, having Obrey back will help. You know, if there's foul trouble or just another guy playing defense. And, you know, I think he's learned a lot. Like I said, just very young, inexperienced, probably hanging out with Jennings too much. Brendan Jennings, though Jennings played much better last game as far as not being a jerk, trying to start trouble. Just play your game. He's enough of a handful as it is with his quickness. He's just kind of, you know, Jennings is just tough to deal with, tough to stay with. And then he finds, and then you end up watching him because you want to help. And then he ends up finding guys cutting to the basket. You know, who gave him a good some minutes the other night, too, is the, you know, Satoransky. That guy's got, you know, he's going to have some more game with him as he gets experienced. But it's just tough to get him in these games, man. It's just the tide can turn so quick. You can see Brad Stevens. He likes to sneak in some of his starters back in against your reserves. Kind of likes taking them out because there's not such a, you know, he can go a little deeper because a lot of his guys are kind of even. You know, he doesn't have a lot of big difference between the first and second team. It's not a big drop-off because, you know, first team is really not as good as other teams.
And also,
other
I, just,
teams,
I don't
team. –
I don't agree with them starting Amir Johnson. I mean, they've basically been pretty bad when he's been on the floor. And I know Gerald Green is not, like, some great player, but when they've gone small and just basically had a little more shooting on the floor, I mean, that's how they started coming back against the Bulls, and that's also kind of what helped them a little bit against the Wizards early, too. And I don't know. I mean, just Amir Johnson, I mean – he's only 30 years old. He's been in the NBA for like 12, 13 years, and he just kind of looks like a dead corpse out there at this point.
Yeah, that was a, you know, that was not a huge signing for them, but, I mean, he got making some extra money, and he's not playing that much, so kind of made a little bit of a mistake with that free agent. But I think they're waiting for Mr. Hayward, who really showed himself well against the great Golden State Warriors. So Hayward was definitely someone you had to deal with. Put up 25-30 on you and got a lot of game. Handles the ball well. Holds his position well on defense. Just a really nice player. So.
If you're Gordon Hayward, and let's just throw away, like, I know Utah can give him the extra year and stuff like that. If you're Gordon Hayward, would you rather stay in Utah, where you kind of, you know, you just got swept, or would you rather go to the Celtics? Because I think if you're just talking from a pure basketball sense, if he goes to the Celtics, I think they're probably the second best team in the East, at least maybe, if not at least third. And Utah, and look, Utah has done a great job rebuilding, and they should be credited for that. It'll be interesting to see what they do this offseason. But I feel like maybe you feel like there's a cap on Utah because if you think about, you know, at least the next couple of years, are they going to be better than Golden State? Probably no. Are they going to be better than Houston or San Antonio? I mean, probably not. I mean, look, it's not like I'm telling him what to do, but I think all things considered, I think if he went to the Celtics, they're not the best team, but they're probably – you know, a lot better than they are right now. And if they had Gordon Hayward in the series, I think they'd be favored versus the Wizards. So I don't know. I mean, it's interesting. I think he's going to end up staying in Utah. I think he likes it there. And I think something about becoming like basically the third most beloved Jazz player of all time, besides Stockton Malone, maybe that means something to him. I don't know. But basically, there's going to be a lot of teams who have max room who are going to want Gordon Hayward because he's just like, I mean, he's a wing guy who is a really good scorer and a good defender. I mean, there's about a handful of them in the league. So I don't know. It'll be interesting to see what he does this offseason because I think what Boston prefers to do is I think they want to be able to keep their pick and then also get Hayward in free agency, you know, have their cake and eat it too instead of having to trade their pick for, you know, a Jimmy Butler or Paul George.
No, I'm sure they would just spend the money, keep their pick, spend the money. And that would be the ideal thing for them for sure. And just really nice. I mean, that's really what they need. They just need a really good player that can really just score and get his points on his own late in the game. You know, it's you can see the Wizards have really responded well to Isaiah Thomas, and you know, not getting that where he's got that one pet move where he likes to, he gets by you, and then he likes to kind of stop his dribble because he knows you're going to block his shot because he's so small. So he kind of bumps back into you and tries to draw that foul and then try to get the three-point play. Well, you can see the Wizards have finally stopped running into him. They're stopping. They know he's going to stop, so they stop. And they surrounded him with two or three big guys, and they're just keeping their arms up. They're not jumping. And they're forcing him either to try to flop or throw a bad pass or get the pass back out. So they've done, a much better job of, of containing him. But they didn't in the first quarter. I mean, he was getting wide open shots. Now, listening afterwards, I heard Scotty Brooks say, they came out with a new wrinkle and they were getting them open for shots, and we had to figure it out. And he said we did, and it made it tough on him. But that's how a 7-game series is, man. You move. There's always adjustments. Coaches go back, look at film, make some decisions, change things up, and now it's back in their court and see what they can do back at home. Wizards have held their court very well, and actually they probably should have won one of those games up in Boston. So, and even in the one game they lost big, they were up big early in the game. So, so far you would think that even though the series is 2-2, the Wizards have had pretty much the better way, but it's still 2-2. So it can go either way. Feeling good about it, but yeah. Go ahead.
Do you think? I'll give you two questions. How far do you think the series goes? And if you had to say out of a scale from 1 to 10, how confident you are the Wizards win, what would that be?
What's the question again?
So how far do you think the series will go? Do you think it'll go in 6 or 7? And then.
No, I think it's
and what is
go.
Your confidence that? What is your confidence that the Wizards win on a scale from 1 to 10?
Oh, I think it's, for me, I'm a Wizards fan, but I try to be honest, and I do think they are better than the Celtics, so I would say it's a 7 out of 10. I think the Celtics are, I think they just really get a lot out of what they have. I really think Brad Stevens does a great job of the talent he's got. He really gets a lot out of it, so. They had a really good year. If they hit their shots, they get good looks. It just always seems to come down to just hitting shots, and they seem to miss them last game. But I don't know. I'm hoping – I think 6 would be able to be the way for the Wizards to go. I think they really – but that would be winning 4 in a row. That would be a hell of a feat. But it'd be tough to win twice up there. So, I don't know.
The Wizards just also play like horseshit on the road. Just this whole year. It goes 7, but I think the Wizards are going to win the last one. It's just, statistically speaking, the team that has 2 home games left in the final 3 games wins like 68% of the time or something like that. So history is on the Celtics side. It'll be interesting. I think. Here's the thing is John Wall has to be the best player on the floor. Like the first 2 games, even though you could argue John Wall had a really great, couple games, Isaiah Thomas made the most impact. He has to be the best guy. And then Beal has to show up too. And basically they just have to be able to hold, the water off while any of their bench guys are in, especially when it's like, Brandon Jennings and guys like that. Just because they don't have any options. And look, what they did when they went on that run is they basically played the starters for a whole 9-10 minutes to begin the third quarter. And basically Scott Brooks' approach has been, we'll play the starters so we blow them out and then we'll get to rest them at the end of the game kind of thing. So I don't know. It's an interesting series, and I'm interested to see what John Wall does, because I think a lot of people know how good John Wall is, I think this is really his own kind of coming out party in a different way, where I think people knew he was a good player, he was an all-star, but I think something like a performance like this has kind of vaulted him into probably, you know, a top 10 NBA player at this point in his career. Even though John Wall will never be the best player in the league, I think there's something to watching a guy, a really good player who's in the best part of his career. Like, I'm not sure we'll ever get a better John Wall than this, especially as he gets older and his athleticism starts to fade a little. I think he's at the peak of, like, where his athleticism is still really strong, and also he's mature enough now in year 7 where he can really run an offense and his jump shot has developed a little bit. I don't know. It's just really fun to watch. It's kind of cool to watch someone and be like, you know what, this may be the best, you know, John Wall we've seen and we may ever see. And I think, you know, you just got to sit back and appreciate it because he is really good. And if he continues on this track, he will be a Hall of Famer.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think he's just coming to his peak. I would still think you have 4 or 5 years at your peak. So that gets him up to, you know, 10, 11 in his years in his career. And then just his strength, too. I mean, the way he just kind of powers himself into the lane, the way he just powers through some of these players at the point to draw the foul and get the extra basket. When to go, when not to go, seeing mismatches. He's just really gotten so much better. I think Scott Brooks has helped him a lot, just being a former point guard himself. Seems like he's hard on him when he has to be. I like that. Of course, Beal staying healthy, and really both of them staying healthy has been crucial. That's been really hurting the development of the Wizards the last few years is that, you know, Beal just got to stay on the court. The emergence of Porter this year, I mean, just playing really well defensively, offensively, you know, shooting the threes. And that's really what they needed so bad was that extra three-pointer, and he really provided it as a starter. And then, you know, just getting – and then adding Bogdanovich – just getting another shooter in there. And then really Morris has just done a really good job. Really, I mean, even hitting a three-pointer. He was never really a three-point shooter. So probably hit a lot more than I thought he would. But he just brings that that little nastiness that that the team really needed. Just really a nice piece. And with him and Gortat already knowing each other from playing in Phoenix, too, it seemed like a nice mix. Gortat, you know, just seems like the more he plays.
I do have to ask you, though, and this is a question I think we've all been wondering. In game 2, did Marcus Morris play in place of Markieff?
You know what? It's funny you said that because I was thinking, you know, when he had the bad ankle, because he had the ankle sprain, you mean?
Yeah.
Like, yeah,
I mean that looked pretty, it looked pretty bad, you know?
Yeah, I was thinking, you know what, it's funny you said that. I was kind of thinking the same thing. I said, God, I guess he could play for his brother. It didn't look like it was bothering him at all.
Because here's the thing. They have identical tattoos.
Okay.
I don't know if you knew that. It's kind of weird, but they have identical tattoos. Like, now, he didn't do it because they do have different haircuts a little bit different. But basically, he did do an interview where Marcus said that in AAU basketball, they switched places once when Markieff fouled out and he went in for, and he put on Markieff's jersey and then went in. But hey, you know, maybe you never know. You never know. I mean, if maybe we'll find out like 20 years from now it happened.
Have we seen his brother in the stands like we did?
I'm not sure.
The first few games. His brother was in the stands, right in the front rows. And now all of a sudden, since the injury, I haven't seen his brother in the stands. I was wondering, maybe he took his place and the other one is, you know, fucking the other one's wife or something. I don't know. What the hell?
It's an interesting scenario. But, it'll be interesting. I have the Wizards in 7 because I think they're a little bit of a better team. But
So you got him losing
tomorrow night, then losing winning two straight.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's a tough way to go, but hey, whatever it takes to get there, you know. My Caps are going to get baby. Game 7 tomorrow night. Caps. Caps and the Wizards on at the same time. And the Nats and the Orioles. Damn, what a night tomorrow night.
Just three chances for DC sports teams to just upset their fan base all at the same time.
Yeah, that's one way to look at it. And the other way to look at it is to make us happy all on the same night. That's
how I'm
feeling.
When's the last time that happened?
I think it just happened a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, no. Did you know that up until one of the Caps' most recent losses, that like their last like 7 or 8 losses in the postseason had all been 1-point losses, and for the Nationals, their last 6 postseason losses have all been 1-run losses. So not only had they been losing in they've been losing those games and series, that they've been doing it in, like, heartbreak fashion.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't realize that. That was news to me.
I read that, and I was like, wow, that's pretty interesting. And I think it just was recently broken, I think, in the Caps-Penguins series. But yeah, like, and it made sense with the Nationals because their all three last postseason losses have all been one run against the Dodgers, and they all were one-run games against the Giants, too. A couple of years ago, so they have found ways to like keep you in it till the end. It'll be interesting. I think I know who you think is going to win. But at least they've gotten this far, because when they were playing that game 5, and I think the Penguins went up like 1-0 or 2-0, I think. I think everybody in D.C. was just kind of like, oh, you know, here we go again, you know, just another disappointing season. And I don't really follow hockey that well, but I feel bad for the Capitals because, like, you know, the postseason is a little bit of a luck of the draw sometimes, you know. The best teams don't always win, especially in hockey. The freaking 8-seed Nashville Predators are going to the conference finals, so kind of tells you all you need to know about it. But I just think it's kind of hard to rough off that stigma where it's like you can't even even though it's completely different players and new coaches and new GMs, that you still have that everyone will still have a lazy opinion of, see, they just don't have the guts to get to the next level. They're just, you know, it doesn't matter. You know, it's just like they have like a – like 5 years ago, they had completely different players aside from a few of them. Are you saying all these guys don't have guts too? Like, I just hate that opinion sometimes because.
Oh,
hey,
I do too.
You know,
I argue with
like,
my friends all
new...
the time. Yeah, I never get caught up
thing,
in that,
like,
Jimmy.
Here's the thing. Like, it's the same thing with, like, if you were making an argument for against the Redskins. Like, yeah, like the Redskins have made some pretty, you know, bad moves the last 20 years and haven't been great, but. They all of a sudden have a good team. You can't just say, well, you know, they're the Redskins. They'll obviously fuck it up somehow. Like, I mean, you just don't know. It's a new team. It's a new GM. I mean, yeah, Dan Snyder's still there. But, I mean, people in life, there have been teams with shitty owners who have won before. It's not some, you know, the Marlins have won 2 damn World Series, you know. Nobody was saying when the Marlins won 2 World Series, oh, you know, the Marlins are just afraid to spend money. They just break up teams all the time. You know, I mean, it's just – you know, I don't know. I mean, I hope they win, because I think the NHL has seen enough of the Pittsburgh Penguins and stuff like that. It'd be cool for the area and cool for them that they finally at least get the thing off their back that, oh, you know, you can't get to a conference finals. Like, I mean, you know, Alexander Ovechkin has that same Chris Paul thing. Like, I mean, how many times was it really Chris Paul's fault that his team didn't get that far? I mean, you know, he has one kind of blemish in his career, where they lost to when they lost to Houston when they were up 3-1. But besides that, I mean, I think you could argue that Chris Paul's teams have lost to superior teams in the second round a lot of the time. And, you know, with Ovechkin, it's not like he's some terrible player. I mean, I think everybody knows that, but people just like to attach that stigma to him that he's like that, you know, Sidney Crosby's a winner and Alex Ovechkin is a loser. And it's just such a lazy narrative.
Yeah, no, it's really it's a Canadian sport, basically. The Europeans play it well too, but Crosby is, you know, best player in the world. He's a Canadian, so they play up to him all the time. They want to see them advance. I mean, they're big into Crosby, Crosby, Crosby. If you watch the games, that's all they care about is Crosby. And they, you know, the rules change for Crosby. If someone hits him too high or too low, or you know, you're going to get suspended if you even deal with them, or you're going to get a penalty for sure. Yeah, I agree with you. I don't play those games. Yeah, we lose, we lose. It has nothing to do with superstitions or they got our number. And yeah, it looks like they got your number. You can say that, but realistically, they just won. They just won that series. And, you know, I had my friends the other night talking about, you know, you just got to blow up the team. You got to get rid of Backstrom and Ovechkin. And it's just not working, they said. And I just thought about it, and I said, what's not working? They're the best team in hockey the last 2 years. They've won more games than anybody else in the league. I said, they just haven't won a championship. Only one team wins a championship. To me, I would rather have a chance to win a championship every year if things fall our way, and generally you would think eventually they would, or you want to blow up the team and you might not even make the playoffs. You're not guaranteed anything. You might not make the
moves. People are so quick to blow up a team, you know. I mean, you could, you know, you could theoretically make the case, you know, let's say the Wizards lose the series. You know, in 4 or 5 years, they haven't gotten past the second round. You know, will they ever be good enough to beat the Cavs? Probably not. So let's just blow it up. I mean, it's just, I think it happens too much in sports. Now, are there certain cases where I think teams should probably start over and blow it up? Sure, but first of all, it's really hard to do because, you know, and I'm going to use some two NBA examples here, but just ask the Kings and the Wolves. I mean, blowing it up and rebuilding is not, like, that easy, you know? It really isn't. And, you know, the grass is not always greener on the other side. Yeah, you trade Ovechkin, you trade Backstrom, you trade Oshie and whatever, you know. But, like, what does that guarantee? It doesn't guarantee you anything. I mean, look, I mean, I do believe that if you rebuild, first of all, I'm not a fan of half-assed rebuilds. Like, if you're going to rebuild, just fucking do it. You know, just go completely young in any sport. You know, don't, you know, just rebuild from the ground up. But the problem is, like, it's hard to break teams up. You know, I know, like, people are talking with the Raptors right now. Ah, just blow it up. They'll never be good, you know, things like that. But, you know, if you just let, you know, Kyle Lowry walk and Serge Ibaka walk and P.J. Tucker walk, all of a sudden you just have a team that's like DeMar DeRozan and Jonas Valanciunas, and that's not like – it's not good, but it's also – you're not getting the number one pick with that team either. You know, you're not trying to get another superstar that way. It's just – people are just so crazy to blow things up that, you know what, like, there's nothing wrong with being really good. And I'm not saying that the Capitals' goal is to just be really good, but, like, not every – there's only one team that can win a championship every year, and that's the thing. Like – you know, it just, you know, what the Raptors have done, you know, in the last 4 years, this has been their best stretch in their history. The Wizards, what they're doing right now, I mean, you could argue this is one of their best stretches. I mean, at least for the last, like, 30, 40 years, you know, the Clippers and the Grizzlies. I mean, yeah, these teams, you know, are they going to win the finals? No, but you also don't get, you don't guarantee yourself anything by trying to tank all the time, you know? I mean, there's a reason why bad franchises stay bad, and I don't know. I hate when people just say, blow it up, and I know there's been a lot of talk about blowing every team up in the NBA, and here's the thing, like, you can't not try because in the NBA because the Cavs and the Warriors are there. You can't, because we can't have 28 teams just not trying, because then everybody's mad that there's no parity right now. Well, they'll be even more mad when there's no parity because all those teams aren't trying to win, you know? And I don't know. I hate when people say, cause it's easy to just say, blow it up. But here's the thing, when you say, or like when people are like, oh, the Redskins should just let Kirk Cousins walk. He's not good anyways, or he's not good enough to win you a Super Bowl. Okay. Like, you can say that, and maybe that may be true, but you always have to have a plan for what you're going to do afterward. Yeah. You can say, Kirk Cousins, he's not one of the top 10 QBs in the league. So what is he really worth? You can say that, but the question becomes, what are you going to do afterward? Because I think for fans, it's easy to sit there and just say, get rid of them. You know, get rid of them. They're not that good. Bryce Harper, he's overrated. He talks too much. Just get rid of them. Well, what are you going to do if you get rid of them? What are you going to do if you trade all these guys? Like, people don't understand you have to have a plan in place after that. it's not just as easy as get rid of them and all of a sudden all the superstars are going to come flying back to you. Like, it just doesn't work like that.
No, and the you know, with the Caps too. I don't know if you realized it, but if you watch, but Trout's actually made a big move, taking Ovechkin off the first team, first line, and putting him with the third team, or the third line, moving up the young guy Burakovsky. And I tell you what, it's worked like a champ. Burakovsky is a young scorer, lots of confidence on the upside. And by putting him up there with Backstrom and Oshie, just gave him two extremely skilled players that can give him some good looks. And he scored three goals in two games. Now, one of the goals, he was back on his third line when he scored. But it just tried something different, tried to change, tried to balance out a couple different lines. Vetchkin putting him on the third line with Wilson being the big, young hitter, tough guy, and a good player. So now, and Ovechkin is probably their second big hitter. So now you got kind of a line that can score and also can do some pounding too. And it really forced Pittsburgh to make a move where they kind of reestablished the third line they had last year that was so successful against the Caps that they weren't using this year because it's a different year, different chemistry. But the Caps sort of forced them into putting that third line together to maybe try to offset Ovechkin. Anyway, kind of changed the chemistry up a little bit of the game. Hope he played a little bit better. And also, another unique thing is the Caps are going with an extra defender, going with 7 instead of 6. And so he gets some different matchups, and he kind of changes things up. And then with his forwards, normally you have 12, and he only has 11. So that allows him to play Ovechkin on a couple different lines, not always with just the third line. He can play him with the fourth line or the first line. So you kind of give your better scorers or better offensive players some extra minutes. So that's what he's used the last two games. And you know, last game they were just dominant the whole game. The Caps were easily the best. They looked like the Caps of the season, where they were just constant pressure, constant. All of a sudden, you know, all you heard about is the Penguins' speed, speed, speed. Well, you didn't really see it because when the Caps are really playing their game, when everybody's contributing and everybody's doing their part, I mean, they neglected the speed. And then you got to deal with the Caps with their skill. Their skill is with their hands and stick handling and puck control and that's the thing this year. You're gonna see some change naturally because Caps got big decisions to do in the offseason. Some of these young, talented guys like Kuznetsov and Burakovsky and then you got the free agent of Oshie and I think is it Williams or you got some free agent, got the young guys that need to make more money and they're at the salary cap limit. So you might have to, you know, keep the young talent. You might have to try to trade Ovechkin just to have some money to pay some of these young guys.
Do they have a hard cap in the NHL?
Oh yeah, hard cap. Oh, it's, you have to do some real GMing in it. It's like football. You gotta be good. And you like basketball, you can finagle. You gotta make tough decisions. So that's why they really had a lot of pressure on this season to kind of win it all because they knew they were going to have to break it up somehow. But, I mean, T.J. Oshie, I mean, he's just an all-around player. That's what Ovechkin is. And Ovechkin's an amazing goal scorer. Scoring, you know, this year he didn't score 50 because, you know, the team was more balanced scoring-wise, which is what we were hoping would be the answer to, you know, being a more complete team is having more balance, not having him score 50. Being the only guy that does, that's what's amazing. That's just special. And, again, that's something you would probably miss during the regular season. That hasn't necessarily been your best player in the postseason because it's difficult. Hockey is not basketball. You can't. Your best player doesn't play 40-plus minutes. He's still playing 20. You know, I mean, your top defenseman can maybe play 25 to 30, but your forwards, your scorers, when you play, I mean, the most you'll see them play is 23, 24, and Ovechkin's down to about 17 because he's on the third line. You see what I'm saying? How much involvement can you have when you play only a third of the game? I mean, it's a 60-minute game, and your best players only play a third. So it does. It is a sport where it really relies on all the whole team, a lot of the players, not just the stars. But it's amazing, though, that the stars are the ones who seem to do the scoring, because that's so difficult to score. They make it so difficult with their rules and the style that they really want to play. I mean, I've never been a big fan. I think you have to come up with some ideas to open up some scoring, but they seem happy with it. So what are you going to do? What are you going to do? But that's probably the most hockey talk we've ever had, Jimmy. That segment.
Yeah, no,
Jimmy?
I don't know. I mean, I don't usually like to talk about things I'm not like that familiar with, because I don't like to try to sound smart when I'm actually not.
Right.
I don't need to talk about too much hockey. The thing I hate the most in life is when people try to be experts on things they don't know anything about. Because everyone's not an expert at politics. Everyone knows everything about politics all the time. I'm just not one of those people.
Yeah,
we're not going to talk about politics. This is a politics-free zone. It's hard for me to discuss it because I just don't follow it enough. And I can watch it and understand what's going on. I mean, I know all the rules. You can tell who the good players are. I can tell what the strategy people are using. But outside of that, I just don't pay that much attention to it. Now, if the Capitals make the Stanley Cup or something like that, I'll probably watch all the games. But and again, my other issue is that if there's basketball on, I'm probably going to watch the basketball instead.
Right.
So, even like last night, I had the Orioles Nationals game on, and then I had the Capitals game on my computer. So it's kind of, either second screen watching it or really not watching it at all. But, hey, I mean, the Nationals are good. So, not the Nationals, the Capitals are good. So and they've been good for a good while. And I think that's something that at least Capitals fans should appreciate, because there was a long time where they weren't really that good. So it'll be interesting to see what happens. I mean, I think of one thing. I mean, that's probably a pretty cool Game 7 to go to. I know a lot of people who are trying to get there and get tickets and stuff like that. So it'll be an electric crowd. Speaking of breaking teams up, there's been several, stories about, or people writing about or talking about, teams in the NBA who haven't done it. So, do you break the Raptors up, after their series with the Cavs, they get swept. They have, Lowry and P.J. Tucker and Serge Ibaka and Patrick Patterson, a free agent. You have the Clippers, who both have Chris Paul and Blake Griffin as free agents. Some people are talking about, do the Pacers trade Paul George? There's a couple of teams that everyone's saying they need to break them up, whatever. And you could make a reasonable case, I think, for all of them that they should do it. But I also think, like we talked about, it's harder than you think it is. Like it's easy to say, just don't sign Lowry and don't sign Serge Ibaka. They're getting out of their primes and stuff like that. But it's hard to do that, especially in a fan base in Toronto where, this is the best success they've ever had, and the Clippers too. I mean, you let Chris Paul walk, you let Blake Griffin walk. I mean, you don't own two of your picks the next couple of years, and now all you have is DeAndre Jordan, and maybe you can get some pieces for him. But I mean, you're really then starting at nothing at that point. I think it's hard to do, and I think it's easy it is to say to just let all these guys walk. I mean, I don't know. It's a hard thing for a GM or an owner to do, because yes, everybody kind of thinks of can they win a championship, but a lot of these teams aren't necessarily always in it to win championships. A lot of owners are, I want my team to be good every single year, kind of like the Hawks owner. I want to be competitive every year. I want to make money is what, a lot of these owners care about, So, and a lot of people aren't patient for, a long rebuild. And, are you willing to do what the Sixers did? Are you willing to go through maybe what the Wolves and the Kings have gone through? And even if you get that game-changing guy, the Pelicans, they've made one playoff since Anthony Davis has been there. I mean, I think it's really hard to just say, we're just going to just let everyone walk and stuff like that. I mean, I know it could be expensive for Toronto and the Clippers, but, I mean, I don't know. It's a hard decision to make, and I'm glad I'm not the person who has to make it.
No, Toronto definitely has got to make that tough choice. You know, do they? They almost have to do it to keep things rolling. But I mean, I don't know what they're gonna. With their better eye, I don't see him go. Chris Paul going to Toronto when the Clippers can guarantee him over $200 million, and he likes it out there. I'd like to see him go back to New Orleans. That would be kind of a cool place. And they really could use something like that. But, yeah, I mean, you can see Lowry's good. He's real good, but he's not great, you know. So it's one of
and
those
there's
calls.
That there's rumors that he may want to go out west. I'm not sure where he'd go out west, but he's kind of sick and tired of running into LeBron.
Right. You know, I saw that.
You know, and then would he maybe go to the Sixers? Like, they have a bunch of money to spend. He's from Philadelphia. Went to Villanova, you know. But, like, I don't know. I mean, it'll be interesting because, you know, here's the thing. He's 31 years old. He's a smaller point guard. Smaller point guards usually don't age well. But I think you could argue if you sign him to a four-year deal, you'd probably get pretty good value in the first 2 years of it. And then the second 2 years would probably be pretty bad. The thing with the Raptors is hard is, okay, let's say you re-sign Lowry, you re-sign Ibaka, and you have DeRozan. All of a sudden, the first 2 years, you'll probably win, like, you know, 50, 45 games, something like that. You're gonna still be a pretty good team. But then once all of them cross over 30 years old, and you're paying them, like, most of your salary cap to Ibaka, you know, I don't know, a lot of people think Ibaka, I know it says he's, like, 28, but a lot of people think he's actually older. You know, Lowry will be 33 at that point, 34, and DeRozan will be in his 30s. You're going to be paying an awful lot for a team that's just not very good. And that's kind of the downside of it, too. Same thing with the Clippers. You know, do you want to be paying 37-year-old Chris Paul $40 million? I mean, that's always the difficult decision to make. But the thing is, I'm sure there's a team out there who would, as soon as Chris Paul hits the free agent market, would not only offer him a four-year max with a player option, but then also clear out space if they needed to trade pretty much. Like people were like, well, you know, he'd be a good fit for the Spurs. Well, they don't have a lot of cap space. But trust me, the Spurs would clear out Pau Gasol and Tony Parker if Chris Paul was willing to come. You know, I mean, these teams, you know, you don't necessarily need cap space. The Warriors didn't have cap space last year. They made it happen. You know, when Kevin Durant wants to come to your team, LeBron James wants to come to your team, and whoever wants to come to your team, teams will find ways to make cap room. It's usually not that big of an issue as long as they're not like the Trailblazers who are like $30 million over the tax or something like that.
Right.
So it'll be interesting. But, I mean, because here's the thing. Like, will they be willing to give him that fifth year? Because any other team can offer him 4 years, and I can guarantee you that Lowry and Paul and even Blake Griffin, like, if I'm like the fucking Brooklyn Nets, like, I understand Blake Griffin has, like, injury history. But why the hell not? Why not just offer him a max, see if he takes it? You know, like, you have nothing better to go off of, you know? And if a player of that caliber is willing to maybe consider your offer, you might as well shoot for it, you know? So all these guys are going to get max offers. It just are the Clippers or the Raptors willing to give them 5 years?
No, I hear what you're saying. Yeah, I mean, that's the tough call. You know, Ernie had to make it on Beal, and it looks like it was a good move, at least for the first year. You know,
but
Beal,
at least,
all that money.
Beal was like 22, 23 years old. I mean,
good point.
Lowry's
good point.
31. I mean, five years from now, at the end of that contract, Lowry's going to be 36, 37. You're going to be paying him, what, $40 million at 37 years, 36 years? I mean, you know,
right.
Same thing with Chris Paul.
He,
I mean,
he was
Griffin,
a late bloomer.
I mean, he's 28,
yep.
But Blake Griffin's 28, but I mean, is his body 28? You know, like,
yeah.
You know, like, his whole game is surrounded by athleticism. How much more is he going to be, you know, at least even though he's not the athlete he once was, he's still pretty athletic for someone who has an injury history. So it's just a really tough question. And it's not, again, people who are just like, just let him walk, you know. Okay, you don't let him walk, and all of a sudden you're the Clippers. You don't have your pick this year, and you don't have your pick in 2019. So it's not even like you can tank. You know, you're just really bad for a really long time. And just ask Clippers. The Clippers fans know this. Just because you get a bunch of high picks in a row doesn't mean that you're all of a sudden going to be a good team in a couple of years. It just doesn't work like that.
Right.
So It'll be interesting. And the same thing with the Pacers, with Paul George. I mean, people were just saying, just trade him. Just trade him for anything you can get. It's hard to trade a guy who's as good as Paul George. You know, because maybe what if they think they can re-sign him, you know? Like, I mean, it's hard to do it, you know? And who says that there are a bunch of great offers sitting on the table? Are there a bunch of teams that want to trade for Paul George who only has 1 year left on his deal? You know, what is a team really going to give up knowing that he could walk in just a year? So it's just people make it seem it's so black and white. Just get rid of him, or keep him or whatever. But it's not bad, and it's way far more complicated.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no doubt about it. A lot of tough decisions out there, Jimmy. Like you said, lucky we're not the GMs. But, you know, with Griffin, too, I mean, he's just never – when it came playoff time, you know, you're not getting all those fast breaks and the big sticks. He's talented. He's a talented athlete guy, but you know, these days he can't shoot a three. His outside jumper is not that strong anyway. Even his mid-range jumper is not that good. But anyway, but he's, you know, good passer. You know, good cutting off the ball. Runs the court well. You know, an athletic guy. But I think he always seems to come up short in the playoffs because his game's a little bit more limited. The game slows down a little bit. And again, a tough guy that. You know, you just can't afford to lose.
I mean, I'd say this, though.
Not
good, you know, if you're, you know, like if you're a team who's probably not that good, if you're, you know, I'm just, you know, like, if you're like the under the Hornets don't have caps, like the Hornet, the Nets, or some team that just doesn't really have the ability to acquire star players in free agency, and Blake Griffin's like, you know what, I'll consider signing with you. I mean, I would do it if I were them. Yeah, you're taking a big risk, and he could just end up being injured half the time, sure. But, I mean... You know, I mean, the Grizzlies gave Chandler Parsons all that money last year, and they knew the history of it going into it, but their thought was, if this works out, Chandler Parsons is exactly what we need. He's, you know, he's a long-rangey defender, and he shoots really well. They always have trouble with perimeter shooting, and he's a perfect complement to Gasol and Conley. And the Grizzlies looked at it and said, look, like, we have this cap space. We're not going to have this again. We might as well take a shot. And did it work out? Hell no, it didn't work out. But I think the process was right. You know what I mean? Like, not everyone is going to be able to get Kevin Durant separate in free agency. They probably won't. I mean, Gordon Hayward will probably be the guy who is the next biggest free agent, and he probably stays in Utah. So, I mean, eventually you have to spend your money on somebody, you know? And so, I mean, I think Blake Griffin will get offered somewhere. It'll just be interesting. And like, here's the thing is, let's say Chris Paul leaves. Let's say he goes to, you know, San Antonio or something. Does that make Blake Griffin want to leave L.A. too? Or does he just say, screw it, I'll come back for the 5 years? Now, like, how, you know, or if, you know, same thing with, like, Utah. Does, you know, if George Hill leaves for some reason, does Gordon Hayward say, maybe I'll consider Boston more because we just lost, you know, a pretty good player and stuff like that? I mean, there's a lot of, like, what if scenarios of guys kind of leaving or staying, I think, at free agency, which will be interesting.
Right. And I heard Hayward, a big spot that he might go, because I think him and his wife maybe like that Miami.
Miami, yeah.
Yeah. So
I mean, I wouldn't kill him for going to Miami, but I just feel like, I mean, I know Boston has always done it because of Stevens, but even if Stevens wasn't the coach, he is still kind of what Boston needs. And they have the ability, if he signs with them for 4 years, they have so many assets, so they could build a really good team around them. But what were
but you got to realize the player is sometimes thinking of his wife and his family. I mean, where would you rather live? In Boston or Miami?
I mean, and Kevin Durant said that when he finally talked about going to Golden State. He's like, you know, honestly, it was just, I'm 27, 28 years old, and I just want to live a different place. I wanted to experience something new. You know, and I want to be with a new group of people. I mean, it's not the craziest thing in the world. I mean, I know, you know, I know people always, like, preach, oh, you have to be loyal and stuff like that. But, I mean, there's no loyalty in basketball, you know.
It's the whole idea of free agency is that he gets to go where he wants to go, not where
not even that, but if you suck, a team will dump you in a salary dump. Not 10 times out of 10. You know,
all of a sudden you signed with
the Heat to go play in Miami, and then you signed for $80 million, and all of a sudden you suck. They would trade you in a second. They would trade you to Milwaukee in a second. You know, if they could. You know, so there's no loyalty. There's no loyalty on either side, and that's what I always hate. Why do the players have to be loyal to their teams when, A, their teams aren't always loyal to them, and second, like, you know, if in the next couple of years if the Wizards can't put a good team around John Wall and he decides to leave and go to a better team, I can't blame him because, God damn it, the Wizards had 9 years to build a good team around him and they couldn't do it. I'm not saying that's going to happen, but if that's the reason he leaves, I'm sorry. You had, you know, that team had 9 years to do it, you know? Right. Eventually you have to put, you know, like, you know, it's just the Cavs had 7 years to put a good team around LeBron James, and the best player they could give him is Mo Williams. So maybe that's why the idea of playing Dwayne Wade and Chris Bosh was pretty tantalizing, you know? I mean, yeah, I don't know. I just hate when people get crapped on, oh, you have to be loyal. You don't have to be loyal to anyone, you know? You've served Gordon Hayward, they could have given Gordon Hayward 5 years when he was in restricted free agency a couple summers ago, and instead they let another team sign him, which is what the Wizards were afraid of with Beal, giving him a shorter contract so that he'd be a free agent sooner. And he had an opt-out clause that he looked for, and he's using it, and he should. I mean, it just is what it is. This is why restricted free agency is a hard game to play with because, you know, yeah, you can say, oh, we'll just let somebody else sign him and match it, but they can put a lot of stuff in that contract that makes it hard to match. You know, that's what would be interesting with Otto Porter this summer. Does some team offer him like a 2-year contract with an opt out where he can then hit the market again this summer? You know? So is it better if the Wizards just offer him a contract right out? I mean, this is the game you have to play. So I don't know, it'll be interesting. But I honestly think the biggest free agent who will actually change teams is probably Paul Millsap, which I know is probably a little underwhelming. But, I mean, the free agent list, I mean, Steph Curry and Kevin Durant are the leaders on the free agent list, but they're not going anywhere. So Paul Millsap is probably the one guy I think will actually change teams. And even he's, you know, 32 years old. So it is a little bit of an underwhelming free agency class. But I don't know. We'll see what happens. Anyways, a team that really wishes they could make some roster moves, but probably won't be able to in about June or so, is the Nationals, who, like you said, they'd probably be like 30-5 if they had a decent bullpen. But it just seems like everything that has gone wrong, like, you know, I mean, that could go wrong has gone wrong for their bullpen. But besides that, I mean, they're you know, their offense is the best in the league. Obviously losing, I mean, we haven't talked since Adam Eaton got hurt, but that was obviously just a huge blow. I mean, I think Michael A. Taylor will fill in decently, but I think, you know, I think they'll try to, you know, make a move for, you know, a center fielder at the trade deadline. But I don't know. I mean, I think the Nationals are going to want to fix their bullpen as soon as possible. But, I mean, how many trades do you ever even really see before at least June comes around? So, I mean, they're just going to have to hang in there for now. But the other thing, I was talking to my friend who's an Orioles friend last night, is basically like, you know, he was like, you know, we beat you guys. So I'm like, well, you know what? At least we know we're going to win our division. Because I mean, the NL East is just terrible. So the Nationals have time to figure it out because it's not like anyone's catching them in the NL East. Meanwhile, the Orioles, who have a really good team this year, still don't have a better record than the Yankees. So I guess it's good the Nationals have time to figure it out because they don't really have to worry about anyone catching them. And so they don't have to make a move as soon as people think. It's going to be tough riding it out with this bullpen. But, I mean, I think by, you know, August 1st, when the trade deadline is around, I think they'll probably have at least a couple of new guys in the bullpen, if not at least guys who've come back healthy.
Yeah, and I think, I think I got Kota Glover and Kelly getting ready to come back next week. So that'll help, you know, as long as both of them are healthy and ready to go. But, yeah, he's got to do so. It's just tough to make a move this early. Sometimes you're going to overpay this early, but there's a couple things. He's just got to – Rizzo will get to work, and he'll figure him out. But he should have done it in the off season again. I mean, that's 2 years in a row. He didn't really do that great a job with the bullpen. And But Melanson's off to a slow start with the Giants, so he's probably feeling a little bit better about that.
He's gotten his ERA down to like 2.6 now. So he just had a rough like first two outings, but I mean I Colum A with the Rays has been really really good, but I mean they wanted Robles for him, and that was just going to be a no-go. I mean, here's the thing about relievers, though, and I will give Mike Rizzo this. You can usually find a Mark Melanson at the deadline and not have to give up too much for the most part. It's position players that you and starters that you usually end up having to give up a lot for. But, I mean, I still think they could have signed Ziegler, who's been good for the Marlins. I don't think they were ever going to be able to sign Jensen or Chapman. I think both of them knew where they wanted to be and wanted to go. But, I mean, even a guy like Ziegler for the Marlins has been good for them. I mean, you didn't have to blow the bank for a reliever, but you also, you know, probably could have invested more. I mean, and here's the thing. I do like some of their guys. I mean, I think, you know, when Solis comes back, too, is someone I like. I know he had a little rough of a start, but I like him. Romero, I know he's struggled a little bit, but I like his stuff. I think if he can figure it out, he reminds me a little bit of Felipe. Romero, I like his stuff. Even Coda Glover, I know he has. He wasn't exactly great, but I think they'll figure it out a little bit. But again, they're going to make some moves, and I think they may jump on it early just because. Here's the thing: when you get into July, you know, close to the trade deadline, everybody needs bullpen help. And so sometimes you can have like this huge bidding war for bullpen help, just like there was last year. And, you know, sometimes the Nationals are not the most willing to move on from prospects. So it'll be interesting to see what they do. Like, do they jump early on a team like, you know, the A's, who has a guy like Sean Doolittle and Ryan Madsen? Or, you know, just see what you can get. It'll be interesting. But, you know, I don't know how good their offense will continue to be. I mean, I don't know how – well, I know Ryan Zimmerman struggled tonight. I don't know how long he'll – continue to be the second coming of Babe Ruth. It'll be interesting to see if they stick it out with Michael Taylor the rest of the way. I think someone who's an interesting fit is Lorenzo Cain on the Royals, who is a free agent this year. And I think as a rental could be decently cheap. And as someone who, if you add him into the lineup, you know, he's not like same player as Adam Eaton is, but I think he's kind of the same quality of guy, and he's also been there before too, and already has 10 steals this year and is a really good center fielder. So I don't know. It'll be interesting to see what'll happen. I've kind of looked over rosters and seen, you know, who are guys the Nationals could maybe grab at the deadline and stuff like that, who wouldn't be like too expensive. So it'll be interesting, but I mean, again, like, I mean, unless the Mets make some sort of renaissance, which I don't think will happen considering half their roster is on the DL. I think the Nationals have a lot of time to figure it out, which is good for Mike Rizzo. You there, Dave?
Yeah, Jimmy. Oh, was there a question there? I'm sorry.
No, there wasn't a question. I just wanted to make sure you're there.
Dave starts getting past midnight. Dave gets a little dozy, dipsy dozy. Dave's 57. I'm at your college. You probably just woke up to get started for your night.
It is going to be a little bit of a long night for me. I do have a paper to write, but yes.
Ooh.
Yeah,
but,
no, it's going to be a long night, but, you know, it is what it is.
Nets got to bounce back. They got to bounce back, win these next two games, kind of get back on track, keep things going. You know, they're dealing with, injuries and, the lineup change. You know, all of a sudden, you know, Dusty, the lineup was nice and long. But, you know, they get nice Adam Lynn's been a nice replacement for Robinson, playing first base, get the big three-run homer tonight, swinging the bat pretty good. But you can see sloppy base running again tonight. The young guys just It was Trey Turner last night, kind of ran us, and we had a chance to either tie the game or win the game last night, come from behind, and some bad base running last night caught us, and then tonight with Goodwin, I don't know what the hell he was doing, running on the pitch, and it's a fly ball, lazy fly ball to left field, and he rounds second, he gets thrown out trying to go back to first. There's just no way he should have been caught off the base there. So just running us out of innings. And really the relief pitching, I didn't think Romero pitched that bad, but he just the Orioles just toughed him out and grinded him out, got a couple of hits. They're good, yeah. They swing the bats. You know, they fouled off some pitches. I thought Albers, and I thought the relief pitchers, they really didn't pitch that bad, but the Orioles just kind of got the best of them. Harper kind of saved it in the ninth with a nice play. Nice assist from the outfield to Wieters. Wieters made a nice catch. That was something that Ramos was not very good at, catching the ball from the outfielders. So it was too bad. Scherzer got that, you know, took the loss because, you know, I mean, he gave up the two homers. But other than that, he pitched brilliantly. And kind of told Dusty off in the eighth inning. Dusty came out to get him with two outs. He was running out of gas. And he looks him right in the eye. He says, I got him. And he said it to him twice. Did you see that? And Dusty just turned around and walked away. You know, when the coach normally comes out to get you, he gets you. But Scherzer just has a way of telling, and the coaches trust him because he normally gets the job done. Now, granted, it was Machado. He had to get out. And Heisey actually made a beautiful play in the stands. He had to run from deep left field and ran that ball down right in the stands. It was a great catch. But Scherzer was happy, and he should have, you know, it was 4-2, and he should be able to get it done. But and then really Murphy kind of let him down. It was a tougher play, but, you know, Murphy's just not a great third baseman. So he kind of misplayed one, and then he gets thrown out because he's upset from the inning before when the umpire just called a strike three on him. It was, you know, 6 inches outside. And Murphy was telling him it was 6 inches outside, and he didn't want to hear it because Murphy went in and looked at the replay. And then so Defoe comes in, he fumbled the play at second. I don't know if that kind of came back to haunt us, though. But he couldn't hold on to a double play ball. So a little sloppy with the defense, a little sloppy with the base running. Yeah, it happens when you get some injuries and you have to play some young guys. And they just got to tough it out there. And, they've had a couple of nice pieces. Like, hey, Jacob Turner now ended up, you know, he comes in, he pitches pretty well and coming from the bullpen. And actually, I was reading yesterday in Masson that don't be surprised that maybe they had put Joe Ross in the bullpen and just try A.J. Cole as Ross another.
I think he did good when he was a starter, but the most he's ever pitched in a year is 110 innings, and
right.
He just seems to not have the stamina to be a starting pitcher. But he's somebody who, at his peak, can throw 97, and I think, like a lot of guys, I think he's probably just better off as when he can just put it off for one or two innings and just focus on just throwing as hard as you can and getting guys out. Because, he did good in 2016 as a starter, but he just hasn't proven he can make it the whole season as a starter. And I'll be interested to see what he can do out of the bullpen, because I think he has really good stuff, but he also doesn't really have a great third pitch either. So that kind of makes him maybe more of a reliever. And he's never really had trouble the first time through the order. It's always been the second, third. So
right,
I don't know.
That's
I think if they move him to reliever, I think he can actually be a pretty good reliever.
Yeah. So we'll see how that works. They'll give that a try. So, that's what it's all about, being a coach and general manager. Coach has just got to figure it out with the bullpen. You just keep working it and changing and putting in pieces and hopefully get players back. And you just try to find where they're going to be best suited to help you out. And then you might have to make one move. Sometimes you just make that one, get that veteran like David Robertson in there, and other guys can kind of fall in place a little bit. So we'll see. We'll see. So, Jimmy, enjoyed talking to you again. Love talking sports with you. And looking forward to it next time, either next week or the week after. We'll see how it goes.
Yep. No problem, man. You have a great night, Dave.
Yep, you too, buddy. See you later.
And those. DC Dave, who joins me every week. Everybody, thank you for listening to the Seaman on Sports podcast. My name is Jimmy Seaman. Thank you guys for joining me. Everybody have a great week. Enjoy the NBA playoffs. Enjoy the NHL playoffs. We'll be talking about it next week.